Even after President-elect Joe Biden reached a winning margin in the presidential election over the weekend, President Trump continues to claim that widespread voter fraud in multiple states is responsible for stealing the election. There's been no evidence to support that, but our next guest has been thinking about what exactly such an operation could involve. In short, it's a very tall order. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you concerned about the president's claims of fraud? Do you worry about part of the population not accepting the results of the election? What do you think of how President-elect Biden is proceeding while the Trump campaign continues to allege that there was fraud? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. John Mark Hansen is professor of political science at the University of Chicago. He was a research coordinator in 2001 for the National Commission on Federal Election Reform, and he recently wrote for the New York Times about what widespread voter fraud would actually take to accomplish. Mark, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Before we get into the issues of hypothetical fraud you look into, what are your thoughts on how this election played out logistically in kind of an unusual year for an election with this pandemic?
Well, I think it went quite well, actually. There are a number of states, including Pennsylvania, that had never really had, they were not a very liberal state in terms of access to absentee ballots. And so there were a number of states that were doing it really for the first time, and other states that were doing it on a much greater scale than had been done in the past. But I would say, given the challenges, I thought things went remarkably well.
Now, you worked with the Commission on Federal Election Reform in 2001. Seems like some interesting stuff happened in the 2000 election. What kind of changes have we seen since Florida and the Bush-Gore election?
Well, we've seen enormous changes, I think, in the vote recording technology. So the real problem in Florida was the punch card system that was used in Florida, which was used as well, I think, by about 80% of the jurisdictions in the United States. And that's been basically retired. There isn't anybody who uses punch cards anymore. So we have better voting technology, I think. We have better list management, voter list management with voter registration. I think we have certainly we've had an extension of the number of states that have decided to liberalize access in the sense of having early voting or longer early voting periods. There were very few states in 2000 that did early voting, only three or four, I think, at the time. There was only one state at the time that did all mail-in, which was Oregon. And now there are a number of states that have broadened the ability to vote even past Election Day.
Now let's get into your thought experiment that you wrote, looking at how what it would take to have enough fraud in an election to swing, say, a state like Pennsylvania. Talk mm-hmm. about what kind of things would have to happen.
Well, first of all, it would be a massive effort. So I think the main takeaway is just that in order to influence an election on the scale of a presidential election, you're not talking about doing that with a few hundred votes or a few thousand votes. You're talking about at least tens of thousands if you're thinking about how you're going to change an outcome in a particular state. And if you're not sure exactly what state it is where you're going to need to make the effort, you may be talking about a number of fraudulent ballots that would number in the millions. And so there's just an awful lot of difficulties in doing anything on that scale. It would have to be organized, and it'd have to be done well in advance.
And talk about what it would mean, say, to get 60,000 people to cast two ballots each. Each of those people would be in a fair amount of legal risk, right?
Yeah, they would be in risk. It is a felony in every state to commit vote fraud. And even if you're not ultimately convicted, there's the risk of prosecution and there's the risk of being penalized just by having to your reputation under attack. So, you know, there's some considerable risk in it. I think we could easily say that it's pretty much impossible to imagine that there would be thousands of people somewhere who would say, you know, I really care a lot about this outcome, and so I'm going to risk all of that by making sure that Joe Biden has one more vote in Wisconsin or making sure that Donald Trump has one more vote in Texas. It just doesn't make sense to think that people would do that in a spontaneous way, which is why it would need to be a well-organized conspiracy.
And how about the thought of, you know, we see videos of reporters wheeling in equipment to counting stations and then videos saying, hey, look, they're wheeling in ballots or something like that. What about the idea of stacking the deck in the counting rooms?
Well, yeah, there are a couple things about it. I guess the first thing to say is simply that in the vast majority of cases, when something seems weird, there's usually an innocent explanation for it, as in the case of the cameraman who's bringing his equipment into a particular place and people are thinking, wow, that looks suspicious. Well, it wasn't suspicious at all. He was just doing what cameramen do. So, you know, that's kind of the first point. The second point is that there are all kinds of safeguards at the vote counting stage, and they range from most states allowing partisan observers of the vote count and the vote tallies and the reporting of the vote tallies. So, you know, it's not like someone's sitting around saying, let's just give another 4,000 votes over here. There are partisan observers who can say, where did that number come from? Likewise, there's a lot of experience. So there's a lot of through the years, what one finds is that the number of votes in a particular election doesn't vary a whole lot from year to year, and the percentage breakdown in partisan terms doesn't vary very much from year to year. And so if you have people, you know, trying to tilt things on one side, it's probably going to be noticeable to somebody. There's going to be somebody in the office who's going to say, boy, that really looks weird. Are we sure? And there's going to be somebody in the state capitol who says, that seems awfully strange. Are you sure? So, you know, there's local knowledge, I think, as well. You know, the last thing I would say is, even though county clerks and county election officers are partisan elected in most cases, there's an awful lot of professional risk involved in being part of something that would try to influence the outcome by fraudulent means. Most vote fraud is not prosecuted, or most alleged vote fraud is not prosecuted, because prosecutors determine that the voter did not have intent to defraud. And it's usually people who've made a mistake of some kind. Well, if you're a county elected official, you know that it's against the law. And so you are going to be prosecuted. And if you are prosecuted, you're going to prison.
Talking to John Mark Hansen, professor of political science at the University of Chicago, talking about the difficulty of pulling off voter fraud on a scale that could tip an election. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions. Let's go to a caller now. Tim is with us in Rhinelander. Tim, hi.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Tim?
So I'm a Trump supporter, and I listen to a lot of news. And I think that it is absolutely appalling that beginning practically on Inauguration Day of 2016, we listened to people like Adam Schiff and CNN tell us day in and day out, without a question of a shadow of a doubt, that the Russians colluded with Donald Trump to win an election. We listened to that for 2.5 years. Without without bringing up any evidence, without any documents, without any subpoenas, without any witnesses, without any sort of evidence whatsoever, 2.5 years, the Russians colluded with Donald Trump to win an election, despite him getting 70 million votes in America, despite having Trump signs all throughout the yards across America. Now, fast forward to 2020, and on election night, Donald Trump was winning much of the states, many of the states, and by much more heartily than he was winning in 2016. We all go to bed, we wake up, and there's a different outcome. And the media has absolutely zero interest in finding out if there is actually any evidence of voter fraud to the claims.
And Tim, I gotcha. Thanks a lot. Mark, Tim says, hey, we got a double standard here. Compare and contrast.
Well, I'd say a couple things. The first is that the allegations of Russian interference were not about fraud. They were about the ways in which the Russians tried to use disinformation to affect particular voting groups, and particularly African-American voting groups, trying to turn off African-Americans from the Democratic Party and from Hillary Clinton in particular. So I think they're a bit different in these two cases. You know, the other thing I would say is that I think that the media would be perfectly happy to investigate claims of vote fraud if the campaign would actually come forward with evidence that it has occurred.
Tim, thanks for the call. And his point about the overnight thing, this is something that we've been talking about for weeks. That was probably going to happen. Maybe we didn't know what the ultimate number was going to be, but the president had specifically attacked the idea of mail-in voting, talked, I think, Republicans out of mail-in voting. We knew a lot of these later counted ballots, especially in states where it was illegal to count those ballots until Election Day, were going to be more in Biden's favor, right?
Yeah, this got some attention before the election, the so-called blue shift, the way in which the voting tallies tend to move in a Democratic direction as the later ballots get counted. And the main reason for that is simply that the scale of counting in urban counties is just enormously bigger than it is in rural counties. And so the rural returns tend to come in early. Those tend to be a little more Republican. And the urban tallies tend to come in later, and those tend to be more Democratic.
And one more slight difference. I don't think anybody said Donald Trump wasn't the president because of allegations of Russian interference. The election was called election night or the morning after. Democrats conceded. There was a recount here in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Right.
But ultimately, it was accepted.
Yeah, that's right. And in the same way, you know, Al Gore conceded in 2000 as well. So, Hillary Clinton conceded. There wasn't that big a contestation.
We continue our conversation with John Mark Hansen, professor of political science at the University of Chicago, about claims of voter fraud and why it would be hard to pull off actual voter fraud on a big enough scale to tip an election. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Dave is with us in Madison. Dave, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Dave?
I'm from Madison, Wisconsin, and there is a rumor going around out on the internet, and I'm just wondering if there's any validity to the thought process that there could be voter fraud via the software that the voter machines are run by. You know, there's a rumor out there that supposedly Nancy Pelosi owns the rights to the company that owns that has that, and I'm just wondering if there's any validity to that.
Dave, thanks a lot for the call. Worries, Mark, about voting machines or voting counting machines being hacked.
Well, there's been a lot of concern about that ever since the electronic recording machines came available right at the end of the 1990s. There has been a lot of concern about it. Ironically, the initial concern was that it would be something that could be hacked to the advantage of Republicans because the Diebold company was the major manufacturer and it had ties to the Republican Party. I haven't heard about Nancy Pelosi's family being involved in voting machines at all, but I don't, perhaps they are. But at any rate, there have been several things that people have been concerned about, and one certainly is the possibility of hacks. The result of that has been that there has been an enormous investment in trying to secure the vote recording and the vote reporting system in the United States. You'll remember in 2016, there were some allegations that, or there were some reports that there had been attempted hacks in county election offices, which seems not to have actually made any difference or affected anything. And so I think there's a fair bit of confidence. One always keeps one's fingers crossed, but there's a fair bit of confidence that that's something that is, in fact, quite genuinely difficult. The other thing I would point out is that the biggest concern back in 2000, when I was working with the Election Reform Commission, the biggest concern at that time about the electronic devices was that they didn't have an audit trail. That is, there was no paper ballot that you could go back to. And so most of the electronic systems that are now used do have an audit trail. That is, it either is a physical card that you put in that is then optically read to record the votes, or it is a it has like an adding machine tape on it where you can review your choices before you actually finish voting. So, you know, even if there were things that kind of happened in the compilation that seemed a little bit funny, there are ways that those would be exposed because of the audit trail.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Let's go now to Ed in Wautoma. Ed, hi.
Hi. Yes, I think it's really incomprehensible that people who have witnessed the largest turnout in voter history think that the votes are going to be counted in an expedient amount of time.
Ed, thanks a lot for the call. Ed saying, Mark, yeah, we had a lot of votes cast, so don't worry too much that it's taking a while to count them, I guess.
That's exactly right. It does take longer to count them the more there are. And, of course, while some of the increase in voter turnout was anticipated, I heard projections for turnout of 150 million on Monday. It's still the case that if there are more than that that come in, they're going to be understaffed. And then add to that, as I indicated before, that an unusual percentage of the vote was cast outside of Election Day. The estimate for the number of votes that were either cast early or voted by mail or by absentee was about 101 million. So two-thirds of the vote this year was cast outside of Election Day. At least two-thirds of the vote was cast outside of Election Day. And oftentimes in states, you know, like the northeastern states, that didn't have a lot of experience with mail-in voting.
Thanks a lot for that call. Mark, there has been talk about, okay, if mail-in voting is here to stay in states that didn't used to know it, maybe states like Wisconsin and Pennsylvania should revisit their rules that don't allow the counting of early ballots before Election Day to help kind of speed things along. And I know other states do this. I think Florida is, correct me if I'm wrong, is one of the states. A lot of states allow those ballots to get counted earlier, and they're able to turn the results around a little faster. What do you think of that notion?
Well, I think that's probably a good idea. I assume that part of the reason that one doesn't want to count them ahead of time is that one wants to resist the pressure to release the early tallies. And that would be a bad thing if people knew, you know, 10 days before that so-and-so is ahead in this state or that state by so many votes. But as long as you can maintain security on that end, I think there's an awfully good reason for wanting to do it ahead of time. And in fact, I think that's one of the main arguments, or has been one of the main arguments for the practice of early voting, which is that it takes what would ordinarily be a really, 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 really super busy day for the election staff and helps to spread that over a period of time and just makes it more manageable.
Now, turning to some of the legal challenges out there, these are different than claims of fraud. Each state has its own legal process for reviewing votes, taking things to court. These little quibbles allows for a recount in states like Wisconsin if the margin is under 1%, which it is. Those kind of legal challenges are kind of a normal part of the system, aren't they?
They are. I would say that with this president, I think he's probably going to make more aggressive use of those legal challenges than most people would. My understanding is that former Governor Scott Walker made an observation that even though the margin of error is within the mandatory recount in Wisconsin, the actual number of votes is large enough that you're just not going to see it change in any significant way when you do a recount. It's kind of surprising to people, but you know, it's not too surprising when you think that most of the counting error is simply a random error. You know, if the margin is more than 1,000 or 1,500 votes, even on a statewide level, that's the most it's going to shift in a recount.
Let's bring on one more caller. I think we have time. Travis with us in Richland Center. Travis, hi.
Hey. I just called. I really don't think that there was really any kind of voter fraud to speak of on either side. I would consider myself a conservative that voted for Biden. And I think there is a ton of split party tickets out there, and hopefully they're going to get to seeing that and hopefully just put all this to bed rather quickly, I hope, because, you know, I tolerated the last 4 years, and I think, you know, the people that are unhappy, they just don't want to, they just want their way.
Travis, thanks a lot for the call. Mark, he says he hopes this gets put to bed. There's still a while yet for the process and parts of the calendar where votes get put forward. When do you think this would be put to bed?
Oh, I'm expecting that it's going to be sometime in the next couple of weeks. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't really know about the election law challenges or the challenges being brought under election laws at the state level, but the people who are election lawyers tell me that they probably, those challenges probably aren't very likely to go very far.
Mark, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
John Mark Hansen is a professor of political science at the University of Chicago. He talked with us about what widespread voter fraud would actually require and why the allegations President Trump has made since last Tuesday would have been really hard to pull off.